Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And hello out there once again. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and every Wednesday at noon Eastern Standard Time, you can hear American Tennis on the UR Tennis Network. That is the letter U, the letter R, the number 10, and the letter S network. And we want to thank Jason Haynes, the CEO of the UR Tennis Network. And 2 hours from right now, you can hear Jason Haynes' College Connection program every week, bringing you a college coach on the UR Tennis Network. Folks, Lisa Stone on Tuesdays has a smash hit. It is the Parenting Aces program. And look at parentingaces.com. Lisa is writing blogs, and she is all over the place connecting the dots with tennis, and her program has been a hit. Well, I should tell you also that on We Coach Tennis Network, Coach J.P. Weber has a great program on at noon on Tuesday as well. There's a lot of sources out there now. This is just one of them. We're called American Tennis. Every week I bring to you my perspective on what's going on with American tennis, and I also try to give some helpful hints on coaching and sort of keep you up with the politics. And is anybody out there besides me tired of the politics? This is grinding me down. But we got to stay in the fight, because each week I remind you that Edmund Burke's quote, of all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men, good people to do nothing. And a couple weeks ago, I brought up the quote, look at my program from May 13th. It is a good one. But I asked about six times during the program, who was it that said, what good fortune for government that men do not think? And, that was a bad guy, and we'll talk about that one. But Edmund Burke's quote I love. We have a duty to stand up and speak out. We say stay professional, address issues, not people, and daggone it, let's get things on the table and argue them out. Talk them out. Discuss them out. Find a solution. But don't sit on your hands and do nothing. If something is not right in the core of your heart, in the core of your gut as a teacher and as a coach, daggone it, speak out. say what needs to be said, address issues, not people, and let's get done what needs to be done. This is the UR Tennis Network. If you want to call in today to our program, it's area code 714-583-6853, 714-583-6853. Listen, my website is chuckcreasy.net, K-R-I-E-S-E, chuckcreasy.net, my writings, some of my radio shows, different programs, my six books. If you want to order them, you go there and check those out, some of my articles, and camps. Daggone, boy, it's going to be camp time now, and we're heating up. I've got, again, the two-week-long camps later this summer. Go to chuckcreasy.net, and you can get information on that. But we've got a lot to do today, and I want to get off and running. I wanted to start out by saying that I'm so grateful for this media that Jason Haynes has set up. Jason is a very brilliant and innovative guy, and pretty soon I think he's going to be coming to us with more and more programs with tennis, different perspectives. I know that he's in working on this right now, but keep on the UR Tennis Network. We've got a lot to talk about, and I want to start out by saying, was anybody else out there upset once again about the French Open? And I cannot criticize some of our wonderful coaches that are out there doing the work and doing the job. I know that these guys and gals are dedicated. And it's not about, hey, listen, the USTA is not doing this, USTA is not doing that. That might be. And on previous programs, we've talked about how we are dumbing things down so badly with the system. But I'm not going to criticize the coaches because they want to win more than anybody else out there. But I do want to talk about what in the world is going on. And for a brief moment, I got pretty excited when Steve Johnson won a 3 out of 5 set match at the French Open. And you've got to beat your chest and feel good about tennis being a true gladiator sport again, and a sport that you have to be strong in body, mind, soul, spirit, in every way to persevere. And, yeah, Steve did lose. And then we did have Jack Sock go 4 sets with Rafael Nadal. Maybe Sock's going to be the guy to break through. And on the women's side, we have a lot more players in the top 100, and we are showing promise there. But still, are you seeing the core, guts, heart, and those things that inspire you? Not just the things that are, you know, exciting, but the things that inspire you. Are we going to have another great champion that can win 3 out of 5 sets on clay? And I'm not going to blame it. Oh, we don't have enough clay courts. No, I don't think we got enough heart and guts and endurance and toughness. And the training is not there. I've been going to some junior tournaments here recently and watching, and if there's anything going on that's going to inspire tough and getting kids tougher, I'd like to see it. It's not happening. I have been going to a lot of Little League Baseball games as my son's quite involved, and, you know, they have not dumbed down. They have made some good and logical decisions, like the games are 6 innings long instead of 9. Yeah, it's okay. And people say, well, that's making it shorter. Maybe that's what college is trying to do. No, they don't dumb down the 3 strikes, 4 balls, the length of the innings. They don't dumb down those critical things that teach skill set. And I am aggravated, irritated the greatest extent with the lack of teaching environment that we are providing for our youngsters. And I keep asking, whether it's junior tennis, 10 and under tennis, junior tennis playing these silly, terrible 10-point tiebreakers. What are we doing? What are we thinking? Can kids get tough for 2 out of 3 sets? All the learning takes place in the 3rd set. Do you not guys not get that? Do you USTA guys, you guys in the back offices, you tournament directors, not understand that? How in the world are you going to develop kids with this silly 10-point tiebreaker thing where we see kids win the first set, tank the second. When they run out of gas, they try to win the third set. It's just pathetic. How are we going to get tougher in college when we're playing no ad scoring and we stop the matches? Are you really kidding me? Is this what tennis is going to come to? Well, French Open's on right now, and there's only going to be a few men or a few great ladies step up at the end of that and be able to do what it takes and to endure those battles. But our continued dumb down of this process of training for our players, it's either got to stop or our sport of tennis is going to stop if we know it in the United States. It's about done. Call in, area code 714-583-6853, and let's talk about that. Let me tell you a quick story of what I saw happen this weekend, and I got to brag. My son plays baseball. He's 9 years old. You know what, folks? Last year he got to play 35 games. It cost this. Cost us $35 to play 25 games. Is this a no-brainer or what when I think about the expense of tennis? If I was not a coach, could I really put my son into tennis? No way. Now, they've always had country club coaches or resort coaches that charge an arm and leg. But our parks should be the place where kids are coming up, but they don't for whatever reason. Their inner-city kids don't gravitate towards tennis. Where we're missing the boat, I think, with the toughest kids are small-town tennis USA towns less than 50,000 people. Where we're also missing the boat is high school tennis, 350,000 participants. I almost said competitors. Participants in high school tennis. We only have 18,000. That's 6 to 7% of that whole group of kids actually play 5 tournaments and are competitors. There's a lot of difference. Like a lot of people playing in a band, not many people going to the orchestra. It's awful. We're creating band members. We're creating. And no slap to you bowlers out there, but I always ask groups of people, how many of you have ever been bowling? 100% will raise their hand. And I said, how many of you are bowlers where you do it 2, 3, 4 days a week and you're actually trying to become good at this? And, of course, nobody leaves their hands up. And I said, that's what we're doing to tennis. We're making it a participation event instead of a performance event. Dumb down, coming down. Too many administrators in there, not enough coaches making the calls here. I know it's aggravating you guys in the USTA. You're trying to get people participating, hoping that they'll get the hook in their mouth. But we fish with barbless hooks. Hook goes in, hook slides out. People pick it up, people put it down. Easy to pick up, easy to put down. Hard to pick up is hard to put down. Why don't we understand that? Got a good story to tell you about my son, though. This is the coolest thing. And since he's started in sports and karate back 4 or 5 years ago, they start giving out all these trophies and different. And we told the coaches right away, no participation trophies. And our son and daughters, no participation trophies. Achievement trophies, sure. So that's sort of been it with Little League Baseball, and it's pretty cool to see him turn down those trophies about 4 times now he's been on team. 2 springs, 2 falls. And the other day, golly, he got the pitch, and talking about how much fun it is for a father to watch his son. He pitched 1 game, all 6 innings, 1 game. Like on a Thursday, comes back on a Sunday, the next game, the playoff game, pitches 5 out of 6 innings. They lose a heartbreaker in the playoffs. They get together as a team afterwards, and the coach, these trophies were ridiculous. I mean, they must have been 2 foot tall. And he brought every kid up and said a little something, which was nice about the youngster, and then gave him this big trophy. And so proud my son, he didn't take a trophy. Last summer at the camp, the coach gave him a participation certificate, and he gave it back, and he says, I'm not allowed to participation trophies or certificate. And so he didn't take one, this trophy, and I'm walking away with him. He did get the game ball, pitching pretty darn well. And gosh, you might ask, well, they lost. The context that was pretty great, though. It was very dramatic. 3-2 game for 9-year-old Little League after 6 innings. That was a pretty good defensive battle. Usually those things are like 10-9, if you out there, you understand that. But anyhow, so I'm walking away with him. I said, son, I said, come on, tell me the truth. You sort of wanted one of those trophies. And he said, no, Papa, it doesn't mean anything. And I'm going, okay, now it's my kid telling me something I just want to hear, or is he telling me what is really in his heart? If this is in his heart, God bless him. This is so good. He already understands. And I thought about how we as adults pollute, and end up prostitute the mentality of so many players as coaches, teachers, and because we give them the fake stuff, the rhinestones instead of the diamonds. We give them the fluff instead of the real stuff. And kids, they sort of react to us, and they start thinking that having a trophy is important. It must be. Then they try to add them up, and they try to remember what they matter, and they don't matter. It's sort of like everybody understanding the price of things, but nobody understanding the value of things. They understand the rhinestones. They don't get the diamonds. So I was pretty daggone proud of my son, and as I am of my daughters, they're doing well. I'm just so grateful that my wife reinforces this. You know, you don't, unless it's hard earned, it's not worth much. And achievements, we've cheapened them so much that we take things that are very weak and very should not be presented as excellence, and in all of our sophistication and the computers and the technology we have, we take dog poo and we put a pink ribbon around it and frame it and we present it as something really, really good. Or we, more than that, we take things that look like a great achievement, but they're cubic zirconiums, they're not real diamonds, they're really just fakes. Consequently, nobody knows what real deal is. Nobody knows what the real stuff is. But anyhow, value and price are two different things. So, folks, this is UR Tennis Network. I don't want to go to commercial yet until I set up the program. I did say that today I wanted to talk about building the program of excellence from A to Z. And this is Coach Chuck Creasy, and this is American Tennis. And we'll be right back, and we're going to talk about building a program. Not fluff, but let's talk about building the right stuff.
This is Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at chuckcreasy.net. That's chuckcreasy.net.
This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and I wanted to remind you of our 2015 Total Tennis Training Camps at Sumter, South Carolina, at the Citadel in Charleston, Cookeville, Tennessee this summer. A weekend camp there and a weekend camp also in Lexington, South Carolina. ChuckCreasy.net is where you can find all the information, and your youngster can come and learn the physical, the mental, and the emotional aspects of the game. And did you know that we have worked over 30 years on momentum control? We can teach your youngster some basics about momentum control. See ChuckCreasy.net for our camps this summer. And let's make them in America. Let's make them tough. Let's do the real stuff, not the fluff, not the cream puff. Doggone it. Are we going to be inspired by tennis again, by the toughness of our athletes? Well, junior tennis, we've got to make kids play that third set out. We got to dump that no-ad scoring and never use abbreviated scoring in the developmental process of collegiate tennis or junior tennis. And in the pros, it'll take care of itself. We've got the best – we do have the best country in America for our freedom, but the dumbing down has got to stop. I want to talk with you today about building a program and those things that you need to do in order to build a program. And I want to start out and make these 4 points. You first must build a culture of excellence. You secondly must teach your youngsters, or through the culture, they must learn how to compete. Not just try hard, not just be great kids, but learn how to compete. Thirdly, you have to learn how to win. And fourthly, you have to learn how to win championships. That is the 1-2-3-4 process of what it takes. Now, each one of those we could talk forever on, and we're going to talk about a few critical points in those four subdivisions there. Building a culture, learn how to compete, learn how to win championships. But you can't win championships without the other three. You basically learning how to win, you can win at times. I always say that if you're a pretender, not a contender, you can win big at times, but you'll never win in the big time. But you can't do that without learning how to compete. And then building a culture is the first thing. I want to talk about building a culture. First of all, it's never been harder to build a championship culture than it is today. And I can go very, very simply put, whenever I do coaching seminars, whenever I do my coaching course, whenever I do my certification courses or talk to high school or kids or anything, I say the three P's are the only tools we have as coaches and teachers, leaders, parents: peers, pain, pleasure. Three P's: peers, pain, pleasure. Now let's think about those three very quickly and the importance of these and how we are being dumbed down by our society right now. Peers, we all know you. Association breeds assimilation. We've got to get successful people around the person, the youngster we're trying to teach, in order for them to be successful. Mentoring programs are critical. By the way, I wanted to mention that two-tier mentoring programs do not work. They grind down the teacher. They enable the receiver. It does not work. With mentoring programs, you must have a three-tier approach. You must have a teacher. Every youngster must have peers that are even with him, and he must teach those below him. So it's three tiers. For example, if you have a 14-year-old youngster, hopefully he has a 16-year-old, or she has a 16-year-old that is mentoring her, and the 14-year-old you're talking about has a 12-year-old that they are being the teacher of. So you have someone above you, someone even with you, someone below you. This is a critical thing if you're going to use mentoring. Two-tier programs do not work. It enables or makes pigeons out of would-be eagles, and it grinds down the teacher where it just uses them up, chews them up, spits them out, and they don't want to do much after that. You must, with the training of youngsters, have that three-tier program is critical. Association breeds assimilation, but the three P's, peers, are critical. Peers, pain, pleasure. As a leader, we have always known that pain engages the brain. There is pain of the situation, pain on the internal part of a youngster, and then it also there's pain that has to be delivered. Now, listen, I'm not talking about physical pain, I'm not talking about even, but I'm saying that as a coach, you do not reward mediocrity, or you do not reward things that are less than what should happen. The pain is something that people don't like to talk about. They think it's the enemy. It's not the enemy. But in the end, a player will only win to the level that they cannot stand losing down to. Coach or teacher, should you go out and run or punish people for losing? Absolutely not. Should you make sure that they understand when they haven't given their best? They don't have to be the best, but is it responsible to be the best they can be that day, or their best? Absolutely. First of all, you don't throw a party. And the pain that you give doesn't have to be a punishment, but it needs to be recognized that this is less than is expected of you. I need to say that probably one of the worst things that college tennis has ever done was to eliminate. There's a rule now that you can't allow players to practice after they lose, after they play. So if you have a match and you lay an egg, and you stink it up at 9 o'clock in the morning, you're not allowed to practice afterwards. Do you know that this is a terrible thing for the development of the player? Now listen, as a coach, if you're a good teacher, you never are trying to punish the player for their bad performance. But what you are trying to do is get them to change bad pain into good pain. First of all, they've got to have the pain from losing. Losing's supposed to hurt. But you go right back to the court, you practice 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour, and if you're an independent coach out there, if you're a teaching pro, or if you're, high school coaches, probably they'd allow you to practice after matches either. Some person in a suit behind a computer thought, oh my golly, these coaches make their players practice to punish them, and that's not the case. You know what practicing after a loss does? It turns bad pain into good pain, and it allows players to grow magnificently. They are able to identify what happened, they deal with it, and they move on. L-FIDO, L-F-I-D-O, learn, forget it, drive on. L-FIDO, L-F-I-D-O, learn, forget it, drive on. That's what practicing after a loss does. Actually, you shouldn't practice after a win. Your players want to practice after a win. They feel good. Never do that. Let them sit on the win a day so they digest it. Never let them sit on losses, though. Never let them say, I'm going to quit the game and put the racket up after a loss. If the kid is a good kid, right after a loss, you have them play right away again. Within 30, 45 minutes, or have them go running. Right after a win, if they're a good kid and they do the right things, make sure they sit on it. Do not go back out and work on that little extra thing. He wasn't quite perfect. Then it's paralysis by analysis, and all you do is damage. Let them grow from the confidence they get. If it's a bad youngster and they're not doing the right thing and they win, I always send them back to court, and I will have them get beat right away, so they sort of gets the fake stuff out. It gets the rhinestones and the cubic zirconiums out of them. If they're a bad kid and they lose, I make them sit on it. You just do the reverse. This works really well. But we're talking about peers, pain, and pleasure, the three P's. They don't let you now use the pain part of it. Just such a shame that we don't trust our maestros, whether it's music, coaching, sports, academics. We don't trust the teachers to make good judgments on the growth of players. So we they don't gain the benefit of the pain. The reward, the pleasure, here's where we mess up here. We already give trophies. We give great uniforms. We give great opportunities. We give them equipment. We give them it over and over and over again. We prop the kids up, and they don't have to be good to earn these. Somehow, there has to be some kind of a merit system where kids earn things that they get. Years ago, I was privileged enough to be around a great wrestling coach. That wrestling coach basically had pieces of his uniform, the uniforms that the kids would get, these beautiful uniforms, once they earned certain things, sort of stepping stones. And I can remember years back, I had these beautiful, beautiful Nike sweatsuits that were given. It used to be the gravy train with all of the things that you would get in college. And we had these beautiful suits. I only had six of them, and I told the team, first six guys to make a mile under 5 minutes, you get these beautiful Nike suits. And those guys, we'd go out running after practice and everything. They were all trying to make a five-minute mile. Nowadays, it's like, just to give you an illustration, they would go, oh, I already got a nice sweatsuit. Oh, I already got great shoes. Oh, I already got great rackets. And there's no value to it. It's just similar to the pleasure my son should get from earning a trophy. If he gets the, they get the win, you get the trophy. Otherwise, do not give those kids participation trophies. You'll kill them. So there's no three P's anymore. It's peers, pain, and pleasure. Those are the three things. But let's talk about building a culture as we get started here. Building a culture, there's a great article, and I'm going to tell you, it's in the Harvard Review. And there's a Harvard Review on leadership. And if you look it up, it's the tough work of turning around a team by Bill Parcells, Harvard Business Review on leadership. All right, and this is a fantastic, fantastic reading. It's 9 pages, but Bill Parcells talks about turning around his teams. And I wanted to say that there's a book out there called The Talent Code. And do you know that I was at a conference, and I'm not going to run anybody down or anything. This, I'm not going to call him a coach. I'm saying this middle management consultant type person who's never been in the trenches, never been excellent tennis, got up and said, well, we really don't believe what's in the book, The Talent Code. And he proceeded to go into his theories that I've researched, and kids should only play about 2 hours a day. The learning curve goes down after this point, and when they get tired, and this, it was pathetic. And these middle management guys are what's killing us. These science type guys, tennis is not a sports science. It is an affair of the heart. It's a passionate endeavor. It's like music. Daggone, we haven't dumbed down music too much, have we? We're still looking for good music nowadays, but music is pretty great. We've dumbed down school. We're dumbing down sports. But there's this article. Let me get here. Tough Work of Turning Around a Team by Bill Parcells. And folks, it's not about the research. Go out and read the Talent Code. 10,000 hours of focused work. Starts out with the myelin tissue, the importance of the myelin tissue in your brain. And when you receive information and you don't have to search for it, your brain very much acts like sort of silicone or something where it just flies off. It hits and goes. It doesn't stick. Whereas if a youngster says, I want to figure this out and I'm going to use my inquisitive mind that God has given me to search for the answer. Instead of just Googling it, they want to find it out. They research it and see it. They go out on the backboard, try to work out their backhand. They hit 10,000 balls off the ball machine. They do the work. When they do the work and finally the soil is ready to receive the seed, it is fertile, it's warm, it's been cultivated. Then when the seed of knowledge, wisdom, comes to the youngster, that myelin tissue reaches out and grabs it. Talent Code, I cannot say enough good things about that book. Read it. Believe it. Don't listen to these guys and these gals who are the theories on the right amount of distance to push a youngster's heart. Speak to the king and the queen and our youngsters. So Bill Parcells has this article. It's darn good. Get it? But I want to go back. Here's the first thing about setting up a culture. And anything you want to do and be successful at, I told a young coach this 2 weeks ago, I was interviewing for an assistant job. I said, the key is you begin with the end in mind. From Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People 20, 25 years ago. Begin with the end in mind. You see the top of the hill and you say, that's what I want to do, that's what I need to do, that's what I'm going to do. What the mind can conceive and believe, the body will achieve. Wow, where did I get that quote? It's from a book. What was that? The Power of Positive Thinking or Norman Vincent Peale? One of those books a long time ago I read, but I remember the quote, what the mind can conceive and believe, the body can achieve. Start with the end in mind and say you got to work backwards and solve the problems. That's what real leaders do. Now, you need to take care of solving the problems. I can't tell you how many meetings I go to and will bring up something that needs to happen. Typically, the bean counter person, the number two person who worried, you know, will not put it on the line, says, well, we can't do that because of this, and we can't do that because of this, and we can't do that because of, and they see every boulder on the way to climb that hill. But I can't tell you in developing culture, the culture is, building the culture is number one as far as building your program. Cannot tell you how important it is to begin with the end in mind. And if you do this, then there's a few things that Bill Parcells says here in articles. He says, the quote says, the only way to change people and turn them around in their way of thinking is in clearest possible terms of what they're doing wrong. And if they don't want to listen, they don't belong on your team. I mean, that's basically what we're talking about the pain and the pleasure. But I want to, his first subtitle is called Taking Charge. Now, in taking charge, you've heard me say very often on this program that power is implied. It doesn't have to be exhibited. But power should be shown and implied when needed, and the person must step up and let others know, hey, I'm in charge, I'm the boss, and this is the way it's going to happen. Now, of course, you do that too much, you get removed. If you do it too little, you get run over. So when you're in charge, though, you've got to be in charge. That means, yeah, the buck does stop with you. If you're the head coach, the buck stops with you, and there's no way to go. You're responsible. They don't fire players anymore. They don't fire administrators for not winning. They fire coaches all the time. There's only two types of coaches, those have been fired, those waiting to be fired. And we understand that, but along with that, you have to step up and say, I'm responsible. I am responsible. Now, with this, wanted to say that the people around you and taking charge, you better surround yourself with other people who are winners and leaders. There's, you know, we say that you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and that has very little to do with win or loss. But there are people who are winners and people who are losers. And we're not allowed to call people losers now, I guess, but there are losing attitudes. There's people could be winners with losing attitudes, and losing attitudes are always going to be a part of our the process of being a coach, being a teacher, being a leader. It will not fly. Power is implied, doesn't have to be exhibited. Listen, there's a saying, number one people, hire number one people. Number two people, hire number three people. You better put number one people in charge below you. I always tell number one, people. I hired an assistant coach 2 weeks ago, and I said, you are going to be a head coach with just an assistant's title, and don't ever forget this. I would rather give you forgiveness than permission. You better screw up and screw up a lot trying to get that one thing right and over the hill. Do not wait for me to give you direction. If you do that, you know, I don't need you. I need you to develop your head coaching skills. Now, of course, you watch that, you monitor that, you delegate, you do not abdicate, you do not dictate, nor do you abdicate, you delegate. That is a tough deal. You must have hands on, you must pay attention, but remember, number ones hire number ones, but it starts with taking charge. Now, about your personnel and getting the right people around you, I've never been into, if you step into a new program, the great coach J.W. Eisenhower told me my first year coaching, the easiest thing to do is to just get rid of people. I believe that you should inspire or attempt to inspire before you fire. You don't just come into a situation and fire. You try to inspire little by little. If players don't catch on, if assistants don't catch on. Now, there are situations where you know somebody, it's not going to work from the start, and that's tough when you come in and you have to let people go or the players. But you set the bar, the standard. My first job, I don't want to talk too long on this, but bottom line is I always come in and I set the bar. This is what's you're expected. It's been amazing in all my years coaching in Clemson. The litmus test was you got to be able to run a 5:15 mile. If you run it, you can play. If you don't, you can't. There are tremendous stories of great players who couldn't make it, and made it at the end when they really figured they were going to get left out. And I have some stories of players that weren't that strong that made the litmus test that became good players. But you just don't want to have pretenders around. You don't want to have pretenders. You need contenders. And you need people around that embrace this challenge. Now I have a 525 mile. That's a standard that if you train, everybody makes it. If you don't train, nobody makes it. This is college level. If I was a high school coach, I think I would make youngsters probably, you got to make a 550 for sure. If there's a young lady, 630. I think college, 525 for men, about 6 minutes for women. If they don't make this, they don't want to play bad enough. And, you know, there's a pretty interesting movie out. Again, Whiplash is fantastic. And the critical scene, the guy's asking, set such high standards and won't these people quit? Wouldn't Charlie Parker quit? He was the saxophone player, I guess, that he was referring to. And he said, no, he would not quit. He would figure out you cannot run off the best people no matter what you do. And the bad people, you better run them off. In my 35 years of coaching, I still only kicked off four people, four people for doing bad things. But I've had about 80 probably quit. Just here's the bar, get over it. Here's the standard every day of practice. You don't want to be here, don't be here. But if you are here, here's the standard. It's very, very important. With this, confrontation is a dirty and a tough job. It just is. You know, and a squeaky wheel gets the oil, squeaks the ladder, gets removed, and it's about asking for things. But if you're too overbearing with people, too authoritarian, they're going to shut you out. If you're too easy on people, they're going to run over you. You have to find that balance with your people, but you better make a good connection and a bridge with their heart. But the power of confrontation, Bill Parcells talks about this. You know, it's uncomfortable always. It is incredible how incredibly hard it is to confront things that need to be confronted, but they just have to be done. It's like the dog poos in a house. You got to clean it out. It ain't fun. You might let it dry for a while. Spray that smelly, anti-smelly stuff around it, but you've got to clean the dog poo out. And this is the same thing if players have bad attitudes or acting badly. You cannot let it fester. You cannot let it fester. And then with the running your program, there's always those things, those questions you don't want to ask. I have a good friend that has told me, always ask a question that you don't want to hear the answer for. You know, don't beat around the bush, and you just got to go ask the question you don't want to hear the answer for. This is a great way of putting that you just got to confront the obvious. Read the article by Bill Parcells. Great, great, great article. So he also has an article about he says about confrontation. The confrontation is healthy. It clears the air. It makes things the way it allows you to build on a clean ground. And you just have to do those things that are tough to do. He says success breeds success, and it's really, really true that you have to become successful. And what do you do when you're not successful? Boy, scheduling is scheduling important. You need a third of the time to be able to win. A third of the time you get your socks knocked off. A third of the time you're in a struggle. That's perfect. But you have to be able to ultimately learn how to compete, then learn how to win. But we're talking about building the culture now. Then learn how to compete, learn how to win, then learn how to win championships. He has a whole section here about picking the right people. Pick the right people. One bad apple ruins the bunch. You bet it does. I want to tell a quick story. I told Coach Sam Paul, he had a player back. I don't want to call a player out, but he was a North Carolina young man. And I saw his picture up on the wall at the University of North Carolina when we went up and played them this year. And I said, Sam, Coach Paul, that's the guy that turned everything for University of North Carolina. This young man had such a positive attitude that he was completely convinced, conceived, believed, and then his body started to achieve. Everybody else around him started believing. And you know what happened, Coach Sam? You made everybody in the conference believe. And that's how you won those conference championships. This is the guy right here. This is your MVP. And I know for a fact when our program started doing well, it came down to a couple people that were the right people around. You must pick the right people. You've got to get rid of those people ultimately. Listen, good people do bad things and bad people do good things. Changing someone's heart, you know, that's, boy, it's hard. After 25, I don't think people's hearts change. I think they can learn how to do better actions. But the heart is a character thing. And you hope that the youngsters have good hearts, people have good hearts around you. But you cannot change the heart. You can change the actions. If you have bad people, you just don't want them to pollute, and mess up what you're trying to do. You have to get rid of people sometime. But again, if you make the litmus test and you make it so hard on them to achieve things, they'll move on once they get the lay of the land. But comfort bears no fruit, and absolutely, positively, you need to make sure that in building the culture of the program that you have the right people around it. So pick up that Harvard Business Review's book on the tough work of turning a team around. Bill Parcells, 2011. It's on the internet. Everybody can find it now. So you build the culture. You learn how to compete. Let me talk briefly about learning how to compete. This is, again, four steps. Build the culture. Learn how to compete. Learn how to win, and then learn how to win championships. Learning how to compete. It's not about being a hard trier. It's not about doing your best. It's not about, as they said in Whiplash, good job. It's about competing. You compete hard, you compete fair, you compete square, but you give your whole heart in the endeavor. You throw your heart over the net, you throw your heart into the hoop, you swing for the fence. Everyone knows when they are completely letting go and competing for the prize, and the process is the right. But it does. I want to give you the quick thing that I tell my youngsters who are young and young players. There are good goods, good bads, bad goods, and bad bads. Good goods are you do the right thing and you win. Bad bads are, ooh, they're awful. You do the wrong thing and you lose. Nobody likes those. Here's the litmus test, though. Good bads. You do the right thing and you lose. You do the right thing and you win is a good good. You do the right thing and you lose is a bad. In the heart of hearts, players have to know the difference between a good good and a good bad. Pressure is part of the deal. There will always be pressure. If you dare, if you care, pressure will always be there. And pressure becomes high-octane fuel. Do not make the mistake of trying to take pressure off your youngsters and make a pressure-free environment. But learning how to compete is much different. Have your youngsters write an essay on this. Have them write a paragraph. What's the difference between being a hard trier and a competitor? At College Park, the great Vesa Ponca, who runs the program up there, has all the youngsters write essays on what the difference is between being a hard trier and a competitor. Boy, oh boy, at least get your youngsters to think about it. It's really, really, really good. So learning how to compete, and guess what? When you compete, you're going to lose first, and it's going to hurt more. If you give your best, a good bad is going to hurt. Bad goods are when you win and you didn't really give your best. You're sort of slimy. Bad bads. Here's the difference about losing a bad bad or a good bad. A good bad, when you give your best and you lose, your youngster needs to learn that this is like a broken bone. Osteoblast, osteoclast, I forget. I think osteoclast sort of trimmed the bone down, osteoblast, build it back, and your bone becomes twice as strong. So when you give your best and lose, it's like a broken bone. When it heals back, the person's twice as strong. Then they stop fearing. The fear of losing, they get over it. But bad bads, if you don't give your best and you lose, woo-hoo, it hurts. Woo, does it hurt. But it's sort of like this disease. Even when you get better, you're still weak. And then you usually have to go through a process of giving your best and losing a couple times. But usually in this sport of tennis, especially, breakdowns happen before breakthroughs. And people need to learn how to compete. Learning how to win. I've got a few minutes left here. I'm going to move on here. But learning how to win, tough one. In our sport especially, when I covered the momentum control back in April, we talked a lot about how when you get ahead, your hands break down and you play worse. When you're behind, you play better. And everything, that's the way that it is initially. You have to ultimately learn how to win, be the favorite, but have something to gain. Well, now, wait a minute, that's a paradox, because when you're the favorite, you have something to lose. When you have something to gain, you're usually the underdogs. It might be fun to be an underdog, but underdogs do not win in tennis. They can have you seated as an underdog. They can have you picked as an underdog. Everybody in the world could think you're an underdog, but how you finish is what you think of yourself. Your seedings are what others think of you. But in your head, you have to know what your performance is that day, but you must do a few things and look at it as the favorite. Quick little tip here. Have you ever noticed your youngsters, when they play as an underdog, they see the opponent's good shots and their own bad shots? They go inner man, sort of. They go sort of reflect on themselves. When you win, you look at your own good and the other person's bad is what happened. When your own bad happens, you got to learn, forget it, drive on, you got to move on. Hey, here's a good exercise. Teach your youngsters, when they make a mistake or lose a match or have a heartbreak, tell them to say, this is good because, and then they have to answer the question. Wow, that works. That's unbelievable if they can get to the place when they miss a ball in the net, they say, this is good because, oh, I didn't bend my net, my knees, like Coach said. That's really good. But learning how to win, listen, if I have a great ball striker and I'm trying to turn them around in tennis, there's three things. I am load up wins. I don't care if they beat their grandmother. People at the YMCA are players that are way worse than them. There's no bad win in tennis. So if your youngster doesn't know how to win, that's one thing. The other thing I usually teach them how to do is make them win sets of mini tennis. And then third thing I do is make them play Emerson tennis, shrink the court into 18 feet wide, half of the doubles court, and learn how they have them hit through people. And then so they don't hit away from people. They have to learn. That'd be like making a boxing ring smaller. Mini tennis works because you take away the shots and they have to use their head and their legs. But let me explain very quickly if your youngster is losing a lot. Once I had a player, great ball striker at the early 90s, tremendous ball striker, but went into a slump, lost 11 straight three-set matches. So I told the young man, come into my office, and I said, look, you're our number three player, but you're not going to play number three for a while. And the while depends on you. You've got to win 50 sets. I put a sign on a piece of paper on the door with 1 through 50, and I said, I don't care who you beat. When you win these 50 sets, you're number three again. It took him about 10 days. He was playing 4 and 5 sets a day. He was playing the manager. He was playing the women's coach. He was playing anybody he could find to play. He had to mark the score down, complete sets. When he won 50 sets, back into the lineup. We did have him for 3 dual matches. When he came back, he won 8-1. But there is no bad win in tennis. Winning championships and being the favorite. Folks, I cannot tell you the importance of when you're the champion and you're supposed to win, you're going to have more pressure. Pressure is a privilege. We got to talk about this in depth next time. I only got a couple minutes, but I wanted to say a couple things. If you want pressure-free environment, don't be the winner. Don't be the champion. If you want pressure-free environment, always play up, always take the easy routes, but you're never going to learn how to win. If you want to be the champion, you challenge yourself. You say, this is good because when I get nervous, oh, I got one. When your rear end starts to quiver, you still have to deliver. Pressure is high-octane fuel. You need to embrace the pressure. Pressure is a privilege for the favorites. Winning championships, hey, listen, if your youngsters aren't carrying 3 or 4 trophies home a year, number one and two, champion winning tournaments, they're not, they're playing above their head. I don't care if it's the YMCA Open, the Little Sisters of the Poor Open, the Powell Club, the CYO Open, they need to learn how to win at every level. At every level, you need to learn how to win. Winning tournaments are important. Listen, one last quick thing on scheduling. Should have 4 times a kid's peak a year. If the 4 tournaments, let's make sure they have an easy tournament, sort of an easy tournament. Then they're challenged, bring them up to racing speed, and then the big event. Now, if they lose in the big event, lay an egg, get an easy tournament so that they have reward on front end and on the back end of that tournament. So building a championship program, build a culture, learn how to compete, learn how to win, learning how to win championships. Folks, we will have more of this next week. This is Coach Chuck.
Made in America, born in a heartland, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. Never buy a tattooed on his lip song. Spend a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't prisoner. He's just made in America.
Coach Chuck Creasy reminding you that you are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or loss. God bless you and help that youngster right there in front of you. We need you.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.